Well, there's quite a bit of a precedent, but it goes back to 1920, when somebody parked a vehicle, which in this case was a horse-drawn cart, in Times Square, or in Wall Street, right up near the J.P. Morgan Bank building. It was September 16th, 1920, and today they estimate that it was packed with 500 pounds of explosive, and that one succeeded, killed 38 people, injured many, many more, did a lot of damage to that building, and they never caught the perpetrators. Now, we were very fortunate this time that this bomb did not go off, and it was due to the vigilance of people in Times Square and the vendors there who called the police over. So one thing this does is chalk up a great success for New York's If You See Something, Say Something campaign. And in this case, there really was something to talk about.
And of course, these terrorists, I hope, expected to be videotaped parking this SUV on one of the nation's, if not the world's, busiest streets right in the heart of Times Square. And of course, investigators are scouring for more videotape now, more than just the one of that man taking off his shirt, fleeing down an alleyway.
Right. Well, you know, a lot of big public spaces like that are under surveillance now. We'll see what the quality of that tape is. There's been some release publicly that I've seen. I'm sure they're looking for much more. They're talking to vendors, and there is a potential tourist who apparently videotaped that area at that time. That said, the person apparently tried some fairly primitive disguises, or disguise in the sense of taking off his shirt or changing his shirt. The other thing is that they're looking at the bomb itself. Now, having the vehicle itself and the bomb is just a treasure trove of evidence. Obviously, that stuff had to be handled. It had to be wired. The truck had to be driven. So there's a lot that they'll have to go on, and hopefully they can wrap this up pretty quickly.
Now, the vehicle started smoking before anything detonated. Is that correct?
And that's right.
Rescue workers got to it?
Right, and then there was some kind of an explosion in it. Now, what we'll find out, and what I presume they already know, is what kind of a fuse there was. If you look back at the Oklahoma City bombing, Timothy McVeigh's tapes, which were only just released on the 15th anniversary of that, McVeigh was very, very careful. He created three fuses. There was a long fuse, there was a short fuse, and there was a fuse outside the vehicle that he could have detonated using a pistol so that he could have shot it from a distance, and that would have set that off. So he had redundant systems. We don't know at this point, at least publicly, whether there were redundant systems in this. We don't know what kind of a fuse it was. We don't know if this was an attempt to start it with a chemical reaction. That was what the underwear bomber did on Christmas Day, and that didn't succeed. There's a lot that I'm sure that the New York police, the FBI, all the investigating authorities have that they're not sharing with the public, and nor should they. But I expect it'll come out as the days proceed.
David, tell me what you know about this device. It seems like a very crude device, even by terrorist standards, just gasoline and propane mixed with fireworks. It apparently could have created a significant fireball and spraying some shrapnel and metal parts, and certainly could have done a lot of damage and killed some people, but hardly sophisticated.
Not necessarily sophisticated, number one. Number two, I'm very interested in the fact that it didn't have additional shrapnel in it. Now, maybe that's just hasn't been reported yet. In the 1920 blast, I mean, they had drapery weights packed in this thing. It did horrific damage, and usually they put in ball bearings, nails, anything that'll hurt people. In fact, Palestinian terrorists have used cyanide-tipped nails. So I don't know whether they had shrapnel in it, whether they just wanted to cause a fireball. But the other thing is you have to look at the difficulty from a terrorist's perspective now. Sales of ammonium nitrate, the fertilizer that was used against Oklahoma City, are very, very carefully monitored now. Explosives are monitored. And they use propane, which can set off quite an explosion, but a very fast one. And gasoline, which would have sent fire shooting out of this thing. But the other thing is, and when you look at, for example, the Najibullah Zazi plot, he was buying the beauty parlor supplies that they hoped would not necessarily arouse suspicion. Anybody who isn't authorized or who doesn't work in the field involving explosives, getting involved in explosives, buying things like ammonium nitrate, PETN, That was a starter explosive that was used by the underwear bomber. Anybody using these things is going to arouse suspicion. So they had to build this thing. They had to do it without arousing suspicion, put it together in sufficient quantities, and then set it off. And then there's another aspect that kind of points away from Al-Qaeda, which is the fact that Al-Qaeda, when they want to, they try to do simultaneous explosions so that you know that it's more than one event. It's not a one-off. Whether Al-Qaeda was involved in this, whether they just couldn't put together more than one attack, all this has to be explored and revealed.
And what's your take on this claim of responsibility from the Pakistani Taliban? They have, I believe, attempted to claim responsibility for things before in the past that it seems like they weren't connected with.
Right. Well, I think it's plausible, but not certain. They want to hit back. The United States is hitting them hard with predator strikes. We've scored some notable successes over there. They're under pressure from the Pakistanis. And it might have been a Taliban sympathizer in the United States. I think it's credible, but not certain. And more, of course, will depend on the results of the investigation.